You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your Frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
What's up, and welcome back to another episode of No Ceilings Podcast with your host. Nah, fuck that, with your low, Glasses Malone.
How I plan to release my projects in the future is in 4 different versions, right? Like a vinyl version, which is like 46 minutes or less.
Sure.
Cassette version, which is like 60 minutes or less.
Mm-hmm.
A CD version that's 74 minutes, and a playlist version up to 90 minutes. So imagine like how I write, you know, already like before I even learned Sonics and shit, I used to write a lot of my stories. Like, you know, I'm innately a storyteller. And then I just be working on my skills, right? Different books I read to build my skills, talking to legends about it, blah, blah, blah. But it's like a film. You know how some films you watch, they'll have extended versions of it or extra scenes that was missing? I feel like music should be like that. And so as a storyteller, that's really appealing to me because it helps me extend the story. Like it may have the same beginning. It may have the same beginning. It may have the same climax and it may have the same ending. But how I get there can be extended, different takes. So I add different songs. But it also, from a business level, would give my fans a chance to just support me in like 4 different ways. So they not just like, okay, if they buy the vinyl and then I release the cassette next, like let's say I release the vinyl and then the vinyls is out for a month by itself. Then the next month is the cassette version, right?
Sure.
The following month is the CD version and then it goes to playlist and it has everything on there.
I didn't realize like books and stuff still do that. Like authors who come out with like even like scholarly kind of type of books will have the first edition and then like second editions or, you know, amended editions, you know, down the line on books.
I didn't know that. I thought that like the first and second edition when they just changed the covers.
Maybe. I mean, I don't, that wasn't really how it was being described. Like this one author I was listening to do an interview. And I know that like, for sure, I know like Tom Sowell has done like updated versions of like, he'll come up with a book in like, I don't know, 2011. And then he'll come up with like an updated version with like even more up, like up to date data to support a point in like 2013 or something.
Yeah, I thought it was always when like maybe this printing press stopped doing it and then they had to go to a different printing press and edition. So that's dope. Like what's great is when you feel like you created a new idea and you like, damn, this is new and how is people gonna take it? But then you realize somebody else kind of did something significantly close. So you get more comfortable and you also get the reference of that person who experienced that shit the first time. So it's dope, you know what I mean? And I'm excited about doing that shit.
I mean, I think it's a really cool concept.
The podcast too. Yeah.
Find good things. You could do alternate endings. There's a lot of stuff you could do with that.
Man. And especially like I've been working on this idea called Story Time. I want Ice-T, the executive producer, with me. But like I want to do like so many like stories on the album, but like I'm getting a lot of pressure to turn it into one overall story. And I'm like, that shit is hard. You know what I mean?
I told you on a podcast a while ago, you should say fuck the hooks and just come out with a giant bar song that's a whole story that's a 45-minute song.
Yeah, that's not
that, or whatever.
That's more like Royce da 5'9" and Joe Buttons and Crooked. All right, that ain't Glasses. Glasses is more, like I said, of a storyteller. But how do you put 12 stories together to make one fucking album? It's crazy. Like, that ain't no punk shit. Because it can come across hella corny if you don't get it right. And to write a story, like I've wrote different stories. Like I wrote screenplays and synopsis that I sold. But to write a fucking album like that, maybe I wouldn't even know how to approach it. I've never seen it done. So I'd be the first person. Maybe I need to start asking about it so I can be the first person.
Who knows? Otherwise, I'm just going to have to, you know, break out my novice penmanship and just buy a YouTube beat or whatever the fuck and just do a whole...
Start rapping.
Just...
What would your rap name be?
I mean, I could only be Rose Gold. Or maybe everybody else got, like, numbers and shit in their name. I could be, like, Rose Gold Primero or something. So everybody knows I'm the first Rose Gold.
I like that. That's clear. That's witty. Rose Gold Primero. That's all right. Rose Primera. You had to lose gold to just call yourself Rose as a rapper. Big Rose.
Yeah.
And then you gotta wear some. What's crazy is I was looking at YouTube, some Soul Train, and I was thinking about what made people look like stars. And you know, I was looking at it was different cats from Philadelphia. It was the OJs, they from Ohio. I think they from Ohio. I don't know where OJ's from, but I know
I think you're right.
They were born in
like Dayton.
Yeah, Ohio. So I'm thinking about that. But I noticed all of those old groups, whether it's Barry White, you know, and the Love Unlimited Orchestra, the OJs, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, they would all have custom suits on. Like no niggas could be walking down the street and look like them niggas.
They looked like a bride and bridesmaids very often.
Don't get me wrong, you could look in the Soul Train crowd and see people were dressed, but they definitely wasn't wearing no shit like them dudes was.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
And I think that's why the stars shine brighter at that time.
Yeah. I mean, even I think back in the day, like they used, like Jackson 5 was, you know, custom and, you know, synced up.
I wonder how would you do that as a rapper? Because you wear jeans or, you know what I mean? Like, do you go get custom tennis shoes? You know what I mean? If you were trying to do that as a rapper, what does that look like?
I think, quite honestly, that was basically done through the chains. Everybody's chain was largely tied to their own logo, their own brand identity. I think the first really one or two to do it was like the where there was a crew of actual artists was like the Cash Money and the No Limit Chains. And a lot of people had those for a long time. It's kind of antiquated, but.
Yeah, but if you go down from a complete outfit to just a fucking necklace, cuz that's why the stars don't shine as bright.
It's true. It's true.
The budgets was crazy, you know, which kind of brings me to what I want to talk to you about, the budgets at that time. But No Ceilings, GL, I know how we do this thing here. Like, the season three is almost over. So to everybody that been fucking with us for three seasons, we definitely going to wrap it up for season four. We started a little late this season because I had that patellar tendon reconstruction surgery. So we're not going to take no breaks off. You know, we finna go right into season four, you know, starting looks like in February. And we just going to pipe it up on the visual side. You know what I mean? I'm trying to figure out how to make it work because Pete is in Miami and I'm here. It's cool when we had the girls do it sometime, but me and Pete, you know, I need to make sure I got a camera because the girls can be with the camera, but I got to figure out a way to get Pete on camera in real time. I think we got the audio situation together because we both sound clear, but I need to make sure that our visuals, as we start to market through YouTube, the podcast, our visuals are synced up at that same high quality. So I've been looking at different stuff. And Pete just left right now when we were just talking about the IDLs, which is crazy. But the term afford, Pete, is the term I wanted to talk to you about. And
because I can't afford anything?
No, because you into financing, man. That's you into finances, right? Yeah, I mean, so I thought it would be dope to have this conversation with you. Like, one thing about, it's going to sound racist, and it probably is, or it's not racist, it's really prejudice, or is a stereotype that I would assume as a white person, you're just better with money, or you understand money better. Because when we talk about money, like, I talk to you about money in ways that I never talk to none of my friends about money.
Yeah, some of that's like, you know, like my family in particular, like my dad's, you know, like a financial consultant, stuff like that. So I get a lot of that. But yeah, I mean, there's broadly speaking, there's certainly a gap there. And there's also one thing I've noticed for sure, aside from just insofar as like, you know, quote unquote financial literacy goes amongst different communities in the country. There's, and I think it's kind of really, this is where it starts. From my observations, feel like culturally, like white people maybe are more like save oriented and less like spend and stunt oriented. So therefore, because of that, they're looking for shit to do with their money that's not of the spend variety, you know?
Well, I guess it gets tricky. Well, let me get to that word afford. Have enough money to pay for. And sure. So that's shaky in multiple ways, right? Because I get that concept. But to me, if you're in debt, then the money you have, you don't have it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So, like, let's say if you have $1,000, cuz, and you wanted to go buy a watch that costs $1,000, right? But you have a credit card and your credit card is $3,000 limit, but you got $1,000, you know what I mean? You got $1,000 bill on it. You really can't afford that watch. So even if all your bills is paid, right? Let's say it's the second, you paid all your bills and you have $1,000 left. Yeah. Right. And you have $1,000 bill on your credit card and you want this watch that costs $1,000. Even though this is really hella thin, for sure you can't afford that watch. Lord knows if you need more money to buy food during the month. But I'm saying if you just had an extra $1,000 counted outside of your gas to get to work, counted outside of you maintaining your lifestyle for that whole month till you get your check to do it again. You have $1,000, and that watch costs $1,000, but your credit card bill, you can't afford that. And I think that's what goes wrong with how, you know, when you don't have financial literacy and you grow up like this, you don't get how it works, right? Or this is gonna sound weird too, right? Like I had this thing going for like the last 10 years where I'm tired of rappers bragging about their credit score. And I'm like, nothing special about your
rappers brag about their credit score?
Yeah, or people in general. Like
people in general. I never heard a rapper talk about their credit score before.
Sure.
Maybe in an interview or something like that. No, not on the song.
Sure, but to some degree they bragged about it. Even culturally, that's become a bragging point.
Yeah.
Is credit score. And it's like, what is there to brag about your ability to borrow money?
I agree.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. Then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
People don't understand that there's ambiguity and subjectivity around the word afford, because people don't either A, for sure, they don't have a consensus on, but they also, in a lot of cases, do not understand the meaning in application of the word cost. You know, if money is a transactional metric of time, they don't appreciate what that, like, say you go back to your $1,000 thing. Okay, well, yeah, I can afford to burn my $1,000 on this credit card down for this watch and still have $1,000 in cash for my bills for next month. Mm-hmm. You have to then, in your time now is going towards paying for that watch plus the interest on the watch or whatever at the expense of anything else you might have done with that money. So how much of your life is that watch worth to you? To some people, it's worth the world. To some people, it's like, eh.
I had this conversation with somebody really close to me, and I was explaining to them that they believe the Kardashians live this life where they just frugally jump on jets. Like, they make this kind of money to where they frugally jump on jets and just do all this random activities. And I'm like, wealthy people don't live like that. And they couldn't really understand what I was saying, because television has programmed most normal people's perception of what wealth is. Like, they don't really have any idea how wealthy people live. They know how upper middle class people live, even people who we could consider rich. You know what I mean? They got more than the average American, right? But they have no idea how wealthy people live. Like, if you drive cuz through Palo Verde, you know, Rancho Palo Verde, and you see Prius in the yard, you see you know, $5 to $15 million houses with Prius and Civics and Volts, you know, electric cars in the yard. And I'll never forget, you know, I never aspired to have like this big house. Like, I always thought about the tax. Like, even now that I'm earning, you know, I could put myself in a position to have a $3 million home. I am in the next 12 months, right? But all I think about, Pete, is for the rest of my life, right? If a house is $3 million and if the real estate taxes annually in America is 1.25%, right? All I'm thinking about is $30,000, a quarter of that, $7,500. So every month for the rest of my life, I will have to come up with roughly $3,000+ just to pay the taxes on the house. That's how I've always thought, cuz, since I was like 14. So I always looked at a house that was $300,000, cuz I'm like, okay, if I have a child. Now, this is back when $300,000 would got you a house in Lakewood, not today's $300,000. Old $300,000. But sure. I was like, okay, if I have a child, right, and I give them a $300,000 house, right, and it's at 1.25%, I'm counting, right? I'm like, okay, well, that's $3,000 or $30,000 plus a quarter, right, which is 75. Well, that's not that bad, right? All they would have to make is, what was that?
It's a few hundred a month.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's how I saw it. Like, I never saw it any other way. Like, I never saw, like, leaving somebody with a huge tax bill as a thing. But I've always thought about money that way.
Sure.
I've always thought about money that way. You know, do I want to leave you a $300-some bill, or do I want to leave you a $3,000 bill a month? Something you're going to have to sell and get rid of just to have a bunch of money that you're going to lose, or something you can maintain and always have a place to stay? So as somebody to me who was raised financially literate like yourself, what do you think the average person, you know, let's say even in the culture, like in hip hop, like right, street urban culture, people that come up poor and don't get it. What do you think the number one mistake they make is like that you heard? You was like, that shit is crazy. And it's the biggest myth of all financial literature.
Like singular action. It's hard to say. I think in general, the most common thing is people just don't have a plan. They don't have a clue. They just spend whatever money their job pays them, and that's what it is. And if they get some 401k diversion or pension diversion, that's what it is. I think the biggest issue is it's just not anything that's on their mind. They don't have a clue. The other thing is people will buy houses on their lifetime, not on the market time. So I've known a lot of people.
Break that down.
Personally, for example, I came out of college in 2007. My girlfriend at the time had been out of college since 2006. One of my best friends that I used to stay with in Oakland, the girl and the friend separately, each bought houses in like 2006, something like that.
Crazy with George Bush.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this going like, guys, what are you doing? And my guy friend was like, well, no, it's a great investment. This thing's going to be worth da-da-da-da. This was a house, a basic-ass tract house in some town I had never heard of in Central California off the 5 freeway. I couldn't even tell you. Between Fresno and Tracy.
God damn, that's a lot of, it's a lot of small towns between them.
The town was called Patterson. It's a truck stop with a housing tract attached to it.
Go ahead. Okay.
He paid about a half for it.
Wow.
And I told him, I said, if that thing's going to be worth $1 million, I'm going to be spending $10 on a gallon of milk. That's the only way this is going to happen. And the girl wanted to buy a house because her job at the time would pay the closing cost. And I'm telling her, I'm like, you don't like paying rent? The market is sky high. It's not going to keep it like this. So because you're getting comped your closing costs for relocating, her rent at the time was like $1,000 a month or some shit. Like it was 2006 and she was in like Santa Clarita. I'm like, that's like 12 grand. Like you would do 20 grand. I said, the swing on this house when the market comes down is going to be 200,000. She spent 500,000 on a damn house and was stuck with it. Her job was paying her plenty of money, so it was fine, but she was stuck underwater for like 6 years. You know, I think a lot of people are like, I know people now, my goal is to buy a house before I'm 40 or before, by the time I'm 35, I want to buy my house. Well, okay. I mean, if that's what's most important to you is that goal, it might be painful. They say in general that most people, the largest investment you ever make is your home. And statistically, that's true. If the biggest investment you're going to make in your life is this one, you should probably do it with some sensitivity to the market.
How does somebody who doesn't know anything about finances know when the right time is? They would have to trust somebody. You know, they'd have to trust somebody who was more or someone who seemed more financial literate than themselves.
Do that then. I remember talking to a relative of mine who had a issue with, you know, what'd they do? They took like a second out on a house or something like that and had a bad loan, or they ended up having to sell the house. And they were like, man, have you seen those contracts? Like, they're so complicated. And I was like, what you take out, like hundreds of thousands of dollars? You couldn't pay $500 to a lawyer to walk you through the contract?
But you know that's like an issue to trust people who seem like they want to swindle you for money in the first place, right? Like how do you...
If you're paying somebody for counsel, just pay them. You know, just pay them for the information and leave. Or get on the internet and start researching things. Look at market cycles. Look at trends. Look at the way. If it takes you, what's it worth to you? Say you make a $100,000 mistake and you make $50,000 a year. It isn't worth 20 hours of your time to do some research for $100,000 potentially.
It's a great point. Great fucking point. So right now is a bad time to buy a house, right? If you're going to borrow money.
Right now is like the most expensive time to buy a home ever because the market, like the houses are so high up. It's such low inventory. Prices are sky high and they didn't adjust downward when interest rates went up because there's no inventory. So it's like relative to real wages, etc., various price indexes, it's like about the most expensive time to buy a home in like modern American history.
So what has to happen at this point, Pete? Like something has to happen, right? You can't have these ridiculously high prices and these ridiculously high interest rates. Something has to happen, right? Something has to happen. America just can't keep manufacturing enough money for people to pay these ridiculous mortgages. Like my point is, I'm like, yo, the next house I buy, I'm going to pay for it. And everybody's like, oh, save your money. You could know. I don't want to borrow $400,000 and pay back $1 million. Sure. I would rather pay the $400,000, have $30,000, and figure out how to make $800,000 over the next 30 years with the fucking money I have left. But what I don't want to do is finance. Like I was telling you this today. Like I'm so done being in debt completely. Like all my credit card bills are zeroed off. Mm-hmm. Right. The cars I own them outright. Right. The cars I own them outright. The property I have at this point will be paid off next year. Whatever I buy, like I'm telling you, I want to buy a new truck. The truck is $140,000. I'm like, look, I can't afford to go walk in there and spend $140,000, but I don't want to finance it. I don't care even if my rate is 4%. To me, I can't afford it. Like, I can probably afford the monthly payments. Let's say the monthly payments, if I put down $30,000 or $40,000, let's say the monthly payments is $1,500.
Yeah,
right? It's $1,500 roughly, right? I can afford the $1,500 as far as I can manufacture the money every month, but I can't afford to live and do everything I want to gamble with in life or chances I want to take if I take on that debt.
Sure.
For a truck while I want it, once I show it to my friends, I'm not going to do what it takes to monetize it. So in my mind, even though I can pay the monthly payments, I can't walk in there and just pay for it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't have, if I have $140,000, that's all I got. I'm not taking no money on no house. It's not as serious because it's not something I'm looking to invest in, or it's a personal item that's just for me, right? I'm not going to send it on the road to tow cars. So I'm not buying shit. I'm gonna figure out how to get a diesel pickup truck like I want, right, to drive around because I want the mileage and the longevity of the truck. But I'm not fucking with none of that shit where they finna be financing no property, I'm not borrowing money on nothing but things I'm planning to make money off of. That's it. Borrowing money for record labels. Yeah, looks like I'll probably end up doing a record deal. I'll borrow money for that. I'll borrow money for the cryptstore.com because that's my business. I'm not borrowing money to buy things that I just want that's not worth anything. That means I need to make more money. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So even as I sign a record deal, I'm not going to buy another car no more. Now I'm going to the record deal. When I start making, if it's mint, I'll start making the money I need to be able to afford anything extra or luxury that I need.
Yeah, yeah. That's and that makes sense. I think a lot of people are you're limiting your exposure in that regard. You know, if you say, okay, at the very least, my basics don't cost me anything additional from what they otherwise would. So I can take my risk over here on the monetary side. Or you would say, I'm going to borrow on this stuff here and take my cash and try to do that on the business side, which still, if it's your cash and the business goes under, now you're stuck owing on your basics. So if you're going to be having risk on the business side, you should probably not have risk on the personal side. I get that.
Okay. So even now, like, right, as I start to, like, I'm finna cash some checks over the next 8 months, I'm calling you, Pete, let's look at a house over here. You know, I'm not even looking to make money. I'm like, I know if we get this, this is a storage of money.
Yeah.
Like, I have you, right? So I can call you and you gonna make sure whatever I buy, whatever we buy, if I buy it or we buy it, you're gonna be like, okay, that money is there.
Sure.
Almost like I can get a fucking credit card and that's that money from this house.
Yeah.
There's not, you know, outside of emergencies, there's no reason for me to need this money. If yeah, it 100%. Makes money, excellent. But I'm looking at ways to store money.
Yeah. And because money is globally, like people talk about, like the dollar is strong against other currencies. The way currencies have become, because they're not tethered to anything and they're all losing value, it's like if you were flying in a little propeller plane and you started throwing a bunch of objects out of the plane, you could throw an anvil, you can throw a rock, you could throw a pillow, and you could throw a thing with a parachute attached to it. You know, they're all going to go down at different rates from the plane. You know, it doesn't mean that because the parachute's winning, because it's staying closer to the plane, that it's not going down.
So you feel like no matter, even if you buy a house, you're going to lose money.
No, I'm saying that.
I'm sorry, I missed the correlation.
The pathway right now of what's happening with currency, with the dollar, is the value is being sucked out of your dollars. So if you're sitting on cash to sit on it, everything around it, like price, if it was water, let's say, and your nest egg is in a big iron chest on the floor and now it's flooding. Well, your nest egg is staying there and the water level is going like this. So mm-hmm. it's just drifting further and further and further away from the surface, which is its purchase power. So if you
just having the cash you're talking about.
Yeah, you need like a value oracle. You need to buy anything else. I mean, almost anything else. I mean, there's stuff that's going to go up and down. So depending on how time sensitive you think your exit might be, but for sure,
you want to get it out of cash.
Your money is losing value for sure.
Cash money.
Yeah, if you just have cash sitting in the bank account, you're not earning anything on it.
Because if you have $1 million in a let's say not a savings account, you had it inside of one of those. What's those things they have at the bank? Lock boxes.
Oh, like a safe deposit box?
Yeah. So if you had $1 million cash in 1982, and then you went, 1984, and now you coming to pick it up 40 years later, you fucked up. Because whatever you could have bought for $1 million in 1984, you can't get none of that shit in 2024. Okay. So I'm not tripping. So even though I'm not as financially literate as you, but my mathematics is not failing me in the concept of like, okay, it makes no sense to have dollars. Like, let me look at properties. Let me look at things that have to rise and do things with money itself, right? Like like no matter what, I'm going to have this money in this property. Like, don't get me wrong. You can invest in the wrong shit and lose it, but you know, having the right people around to say, okay, this right here is going to be worth this.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't gain $1, it's going to be worth this. And God willing, we could do a couple things and now make that money, you know, worth more money, or not even worth more money, literally adjust with inflation.
All right, so there we were, cruising through the new open-air zoo, when I realized that the park was closing in like 15 minutes. Luckily, we were in my Nissan Rogue. With its powerful V6 turbo engine, well, we had time to see all the animals. Whoa! And outrun a few!
Drive the Nissan Rogue.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
My current book that I'm reading, by my main man, George Gilder, The Scandal of Money, Why Wall Street Recovers But the Economy Never Does.
The Scandal of Money. I'm going to have to get that. Is it tough?
This is the greatest book. My God. It's work, but it's beautiful. It's just, I just love it. But,
does it help with your financial literacy anymore?
Yeah, yeah. If you understand how to apply it, for sure. It's one of those things I want to read the whole thing, soak it in, and then start taking that to market just to be a little bit better. But as far as predictive nature on the macro side, it really dials it in. It's a lot of theory. It's a lot of history, but it's informed. And it's written in such dense English. If this was like written to be read quickly, it'd be this thick. I mean, this is 600 pages of literature and 180 pages. But he talks about like value oracles and stuff like that. So, you know, for a long time, the dollar was pinned to gold and we were taken off the gold standard. And, you know, there's a lot of talk that now all these currencies are kind of floating and they're semi-tied to each other. I mean, the problem is it's kind of like that airplane analogy. You took a bunch of different objects of different weights and shapes that might fall to the ground at different rates. They're all tied together kind of by the same rope when they're just kind of all drifting downward. One thing this points to is like gold value. So like gold pricing. This book says that the gold price of oil, meaning that if you were transacting in gold in 1970, as the dollar was pinned to gold, and you were buying gas, a barrel of oil would be like $2.89 today in gold prices. But the dollar's drifted so far from gold that while gold isn't any more valuable relative to oil, it's way more valuable relative to the dollar. So you might think, everybody's brain thinks in dollars, right? Which is natural. But if you just bought gold and you had a long-term time exit strategy, eventually over time, you're going to realize, wow, my gold has gained so much value. It's probably not so much that gold is more valuable today. It's just that your dollars are less valuable today.
Mm. So why not buy the fucking oil? Like, what? Why are we buying things that don't have a serviceable need to daily living? Like, and I do think gold, obviously, they did need gold at a time, and gold has some value, but it's not fucking oil. Oil, like, if you had a fucking barrel of oil 40 years ago, and then you had that fucking barrel of oil today, that shit is out of this world. And I don't want to use the term investment. I'm really sketchy about that word investment. Right. But I'm saying for sure there's better ways to put your money up.
Yeah.
Than just buying gold, right?
I'll put it this way. Like, the U.S. government is spending like $4.5 trillion a year right now. That money is going somewhere. The expression is the money has to find a home. So I was having a conversation today with my buddy Jamaican Andre. He was talking about Biden keeps starting all these wars. The funny thing is Biden's paying for both sides of these wars.
Sure.
Paying Russia. Yeah. And yeah, especially right now. Because
both sides and the winner owe you anyway.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's all contract driven. The money has to have somewhere to go. You know, I've seen like however many bazillions of dollars we've spent on various green energy projects because they passed the bills and the money has to go somewhere. You know, so really what's happening right now is, like, not to be too, you know, in the weeds, but they keep raising and raising and raising like public employee pensions, right? This all the time, more and more and more. So what's happening is they pass a bill, flood these commitments to raise these pension plans. The pension plans have managers. In the most common case, it's BlackRock, which is a giant fund that controls about $10 trillion as one singular fund of assets under custody. And they take that money and they buy stock in a bunch of different companies, and the stocks go up. So, like, you know, you pass a law saying we have to make electric cars, throw a bunch of money into the market, and everyone takes that money and sends it over to Tesla to go buy the cars to prop up the stock because the money's losing value. So you got to put into something. That's just kind of the issue. The problem is, I think there is a major consumer culture issue right now in the country. The credit card debt is like through the ceiling all time. So a lot of people got money to burn and they're just burning it if they're not planting it.
It's kind of hard to have a real conversation because, don't get me wrong, there's a class of people in America that they don't even have. The true position to plan economically.
Sure.
Right. There's a class of people. It's not a huge class, but there's 100%, a realistic class. Right. But
yeah,
what I'm thinking about is, if everybody's greatest investment is a house, like, right, and in a time like now where you shouldn't buy a house, you should just be preparing yourself to buy a house. But then how do you keep the dollars? Like, you don't think the economy is getting really crazy to where, like, right now, if you're just saving money, right, you're like, okay, this is not a great time to buy a house. So I'm going to save $400 a month. But then by the end of the year, you have $4,800. But now next year, inflation has turned that $4,800 into $2,200. Like, you almost have to be, and this is the problem with, and I don't want to blame capitalism, because I genuinely don't believe capitalism is no holds barred.
Yeah.
And I think I keep hearing that, right? Me and Charlamagne talk about this all the time, and he calls it compassionate capitalism, which don't even make sense. But I don't think capitalism is about selling out. You know what? Wealth has changed. And I guess that's the point I'm saying, Pete. Wealth has changed. Wealth, when Hershey, the guy that started Hershey's, you know, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the guy that started, it wasn't just economics. It was like the respect you got amongst other human beings in your country, in your location, for being the center of an economy. Sure. You know, right here, yeah, for so many thousands and thousands of people, right? That was a part of wealth. It was never just, you know, oh, I need $1 trillion. It was like, whatever the surplus amount of money I made was cool, right? And it meant that I can keep, like we talked about it before, where you could, the people who started like Sam Walton could keep trying to revolutionize the experience for human beings, right, in America. And the other part of the wealth was like the fact that they were responsible for an economy of people fulfilling their dreams of owning a home, putting their kids in a separate situation to where, yeah, they can go out and really take a shot to be Hershey. And now wealth for most human beings has been reduced down to just the amount of money you're making, or this weird space of, and culturally, this is another thing. Like, when I say culturally, I'm not talking about blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm talking about street urban. Whereas you hear the term generational wealth, where you got a bunch of people talking about leaving a bunch of money to kids, that don't really make sense. Because if you're making a living in that space, your kids should be being prepared to go out and do the same thing. So you shouldn't have to leave them. Shit, you should be able to take that kind of money and, you know, once you pass away, take a minimal amount and give it to your family so they can keep pursuing the things you were showing them growing up, but also to a bunch of underprivileged people who didn't have you as a father, right, to go out and, okay, maybe this could help change 1 out of 100 people's lives, you know, but, you know, let's put it back into people who don't have any chance, who didn't grow up with these opportunities and advance, you know, a positioning as, let's say, my kid. But now it's just been switched to how much money you have. Like, so how do you combat that? Because at this point, like you're saving money, $4,800, but
yeah,
the money is, the inflation is so bad and the dollar bill is losing value so quickly that $4,800 you saved in 2024 might be worth $2,600 in 2025.
Yeah, and that's the issue, like, with regard to, you know, like, I don't want to say like the scandal of money that in so far as the context of the book, but the phrase. What's happening right now, that's why you see these like macro terms about, oh, Bidenomics is doing so well. Look at the aggregate data of the performance of whatever, you know, index they're choosing from. The problem with that is surplus capital is being put into stuff that's exploding in value relative to the dollar. So the greater your ratio of wealth that is not confined to your primary sustenance, you're just, it's amplifying the ability of people of greater wealth to just run the fuck away from people of minimal wealth. Because if you're only able to put 2% of what you have into, you know, just like the Magnificent Seven stock index, which is the seven tech companies that have taken on trillions of dollars in market capitalization value over the last year or two, Like, you only are going to get, you know, you went from 2% to 3%, you know, whereas somebody else who took 80% of their wealth and put it into those things went from 80% to 120%, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, it's, it makes it really, really, really tough. And like I said, I'm in it. I'm not rolling in cash. I'm just pinching every nickel until
you shoot your shot. You need one thing. Once you get one thing to hit, then you can reposition yourself, you know, within opportunities.
But I've whittled down my per diem expenses to like nada. Sure. I mean, I cooked a big old thing of jambalaya on Monday. It was good as fuck, but it cost me like $36 to do all the ingredients, cook it from scratch. Every single day, I'm like, peanut butter, honey sandwich, glass of milk, Cuban coffee for lunch. I'm making for breakfast. I'm making an omelet and a glass of orange juice at lunch, and then I'm having either whatever I cooked or whatever my leftovers are for dinner. So on a 4-day spread, my per diem is like, I swear to God, $9 for life per day. So what that enables me to be able to do, I could soak up some money and throw it into stuff. Dude, side note, I got so fucked yesterday. There was an announcement that, and then the announcement came today anyway. I knew that was going to happen anyhow. It was so stupid. So yesterday there was an announcement that the SEC was going to approve Bitcoin EFTs. It's a lot of financial jargon making it legal for institutions to buy Bitcoin, drive up the price of Bitcoin. So I see that in an email and I go, holy crap, it's after hours. I'm going to do this right now. So I move like 11 and a half grand over to do this. Before I did that, the previous email says SEC gets hacked. It said SEC gets hacked. I'm like, I don't care about the SEC. Fuck them. The email I get after I do the transaction says SEC Twitter hacked. I go, that's odd. I click on it. The announcement from the previous email that spurred me to make the purchase was apparently the result of their Twitter getting hacked and the announcement being put out falsely, because I couldn't figure out after I bought it why the price kept going down and I'm losing hundreds of dollars before my very eyes. And then it was a result of a Twitter hack. So I'm like, fuck, now I'm stuck with this shit. I don't know how long I'm going to be stuck with this Bitcoin until it goes back up and I can just get back to zero again. So I wake up in the morning and for whatever reason, they make an announcement and they say, oh, no, we're going to approve it. So it goes back up. I sell it. Crypto.com from the name of that stupid arena downtown rips 2% out of my transaction. So my profit dissolves. But I ended up actually, I mean, coming back to within a dollar of where I started through the whole Twitter fake scam scandal. It was a joke. Stressed me out for like 12 hours. So stupid.
I mean, you gotta risk it to get the biscuit. You know, if you're trying to hit in this world, if you're trying to hit, you probably gonna have to take some sick gambles.
Sometimes, yeah, I've taken a couple of them, man. Taken a couple of them, but that's what you gotta do.
Good looking out for tuning in to the No Ceilings Podcast. Please do us a favor and subscribe, rate, comment, and share. This episode was recorded right here on the west coast of the USA and produced by my homeboy, A King, for the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartRadio. Yeah.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hold up.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.